privacy in terms of national school education research?
I think privacy is important. And generally speaking, I would come down on the side of privacy. That means, however, that we can do less research and we can learn less under the new privacy restrictions than we could before the privacy restrictions existed. And the United States now has a more rigorous privacy code than most other countries do, and we have a more rigorous Committee on Review of Human Subjects policies than most other countries do. That means that other nations have the potentiality of engaging in research in the social and behavioral sciences that we are not able to engage in the United States because we take privacy seriously. Having said all that, I would still say I take privacy seriously. Speaker is an EPDA fellow in Michigan State and is interested in what's happening with vocational education and with the deputy for vocational education. I think that the deputy position which you are referring to is the one in the Office of Education, which is a separate office from the National Institute of Education. Yes, the National Institute of Education and the Office of Education are parallel agencies within the federal government. And the Office of Education is concerned with operational programs and providing funds for operational programs. It also does research, but its primary focus is on operational programs. The National Institute of Education, its primary emphasis is on educational research and development. I think I can speak for the Commissioner of Education, Ernest Boyer, to say that he is very concerned about filling this position. It is high on his agenda of matters to be addressed, and that he is looking for the most qualified person to fill it, and he does not believe women are excluded from that category or the minorities are excluded from that category. That's absolutely right, and I'm sure that he and his staff would welcome any suggestions and resumes of candidates that you would care to send to him. Yes. The question is, what about research on the handicapped under mainstreaming? And most of that research which is going on is being handled under the Bureau of the Education of the Handicapped and the Office of Education, which is Mr. Boyer's operation, and specifically under the leadership, the Bureau of the Handicapped, of Ed Martin. And yes, they have an extensive research budget, and they are concerned about figuring out ways to devise what we can learn from the new regulations about mainstreaming the handicapped youngsters. Yes. The question has to do with teaching English as a second language to Spanish-speaking adults and where information is available on that subject. And the man has inquired broadly and has not been satisfied with what he's found so far. Let me make a couple suggestions. Maybe some of the rest of you have suggestions. First, let me ask you, where are you from? Where are you? Texas, okay. At CEDL, S-E-D-L, in Austin, they have got a substantial program in bilingual education, which includes a program for adults. And the head of that whole operation is Jim Perry, P-E-R-R-Y. And I would think that you might want to write to him and perhaps talk with somebody on his staff who is particularly interested in this, and they have a variety of kinds of materials available. At NIE, the person who is most concerned about that is Mike O'Malley, O'Malley. He sounds Irish, but his mother is Spanish. And we also have a program in our basic skills division that is worried about adult learning and adult education and adult literacy. And the person for that is Tom Stitcht, S-T-I-C-H-T. He's primarily concerned about adult literacy in general, not bilingual literacy. Yes. National Association of Foreign Student Affairs in Washington has material available on teaching English as a second language. I think one of the issues is lack of adequate materials. And that what you need are materials that are aimed at grown-ups, not at kids. And I think both CETL and NIE have made some efforts in that direction. Yeah. Yes. The question is, what kind of research is the government doing on the primary grades 2 to 6? Up to now, age 2 to 6. Uh-huh, sorry, I misunderstood you. You mean children who are 2 to 6, that is, before they hit the public schools ordinarily. Most of the work that is going on in the federal government in that area is in the Office of Child Development. The person who has the overall responsibility for that is a Texan, Bambi Cardenas, C-A-R-D-E-N-A-S. And they have, in addition to operating the Head Start programs, they also have a substantial research function. At NIE, we have done relatively less of that, simply because it's being handled in another part of the federal government, although we have done a little. The Office of Education has done a little, but I think the Office of Child Development is your best bet for that. Yes? The question is, what's the reaction of NIE to what she heard on the news the other day about giving away gifts to people who learned? I think we all got a big giggle out of it, and I suspect that some of us who were giggling, at least it's true of me, remember having done that ourselves to very beneficial effects with our classes at an earlier stage of the game. I don't think anybody, I mean, I can remember... when I had an extremely recalcitrant eighth grade in the Dismal Swamp in Virginia some years ago, I'd worked very hard to get them to learn some material which, on the whole, the class had learned very well. After I graded the papers, I returned the test papers with a Hershey bar on each one. Now, I would not argue that educational research tells us that that is the proper... motive, that's a proper motivating activity for learning. But I guess I would say that within reason, anything that makes the kids and the teachers get together and appreciate and show each other that they appreciate each other is a good thing. And the kids like the Hershey bars. I don't think there were any diabetic youngsters in the class. And they were pleased that I was pleased that they had learned. And I was certainly pleased. And it's difficult to know how it is as a teacher that you express your pleasure at improved student performance. But, the serious research that we undertake at NIE, which does not involve Hershey bars, indicates that teacher expectation and teacher approval is a positive factor in terms of increased student achievement, to put it in the formal terms of the educator. Obviously you can overdo that kind of thing. I think that there is an enormous role to be played by common sense in these matters. And common sense would suggest that every once in a while you do something, when your students have done something good, that you do something in response to the students to say, gee, isn't it great that we're doing so well? Well, that's Hershey bars or Frisbees, you know, who cares? Yeah. We should have stopped these questions a while ago. She wants to know... she wants to know what more I can say about motivation and how we can get more of it. I guess that one of the issues that I take very seriously is that teachers have to believe that their students can learn under the teacher's instruction. And so, in a sense, you got to start with the teacher. And the teacher has to be convinced that when she gets up in the morning, starting in September and running through June, that in June the kids are going to know more than they did in September, and that part of their knowing more is going to be as a result of her leadership of that classroom. So I start with the teacher's motivation. And I guess if there's one thing that concerned me in the 10 years that I was in the New York City working with the New York City Public Schools, it was that I, on occasion, encountered teachers who didn't believe their kids would learn. And if the teacher didn't believe the kid would learn, you can bet your bottom dollar that those kids didn't believe they were going to learn, and that the issue of motivation for the kids was absolutely academic if the teacher didn't believe in them. So I would start with the teacher, and then I would think that the teacher needs to be inventive in figuring out where the kids are, and not just being relevant, but taking them from where they are to where the teacher wants them to go, not necessarily where the kid would choose to go. When I used to work with student teachers, they would, you don't know how to train. I mean, let's admit it, we don't know how to train teachers. None of us does. But, you know, you apply the best sense you got to the situation. And teachers would come in to me, and after I've been doing this for a while, I realized that they were asking the same question and that I was giving a very unsatisfactory answer to it, and I decided I better come up with some kind of answer. And the question that they were asking, in summary, was, Mrs. Graham, what is the most important thing that I should do in my classroom? Well, I mean, what was I supposed to say to that? I didn't know what the most important thing was they were supposed to do in their classroom, but I decided after a while it was time to be able to answer that question. So I said, with a perfectly straight face, I said, every day, every child whom you teach has got to do something right in your classroom, and you got to tell them that they did it right. And that was my one rule. They said, well, but Mrs. Graham, I've got kids in my classroom who don't speak English. I've got kids in my classroom who have IQs of 61. I've got, how can they do anything right? So I said, okay, I said, for the kid with the IQ of 61, when the door is open and you want the door closed, you say, Eileen, will you please close the door? And Eileen, IQ 61, manages to get up and close the door and come back and sit down, and you say, thank you, Eileen. This is Eileen Shanahan. IQ of substantially more than 61. You deal with every kid so that every kid has at least one positive experience with you in your classroom every day. Now, obviously, you want to move on to be saying, Eileen, that was a brilliant composition that you wrote. But, you know, you start where the child is. And you wean them into an increasingly academic experience from the mechanical one of opening the window, closing the door, bringing you the book, something. Because it is staggering how many youngsters go through school day after school day after school day only being told how naughty they are or how inadequate they are. And you're never going to get youngsters motivated to find school a pleasant place if they only are told how crummy they are in it. Yes. Well, probably no more than in any other field. Sure. It's absolutely part of the problem. And that's why I think it's vital that we, I mean, that's why they thought about the teacher-proof curriculum. And that's why they thought about bringing all these bright, young, liberal arts college graduates into teaching. But those are not solutions that are open to us anymore. And so now we're really getting right down to the bone of the hard problems. And the bone of the hard problems is taking teachers who have lost faith in the schools and in themselves, and helping them regain faith in their enterprise, and giving them the skills that they need in order to be effective in the job that they have. And that's not easy.
With that, we're going to have to close this, our time has run out on us. I want to thank you very much.
Well, thank you. We have an assistant, former assistant superintendent in the Arlington schools who is now with us, and I don't know, but I'm sure he does. His name is Todd Endo.
Miss, well, I have two children that quite excited.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
They have asked to interview you over at the dance. So may I have
to take
you there?
Sure.
When you're finished here.
Can I just say hello? I'm one of those EAPs.
Oh!